Today's Revolution. At the present moment in time, there are actually two major revolutions in progress. One is the real revolution. The other has many of the attributes of revolution, but in point of fact, it isn't really a revolution if we understand the meaning of the term. I would like to begin by drawing your attention to a book written by Rose Wilder Lane entitled The Discovery of Freedom, and I would like to read a few paragraphs from this work. I quote, "When men try to make energy work, and it does not work, it fails to work because they are not using that energy in accordance with its own nature. A gasoline engine will never run on water because it is not the nature of steam to explode when a spark touches it. When, for 6,000 years, human energy does not work well enough to get from this earth enough food to keep human beings alive, it does not work because men are not using their energy in accordance with the nature of human energy. Every human being, by his nature, is free. That is to say, he controls himself. But in the old world, men believe that some authority outside himself controls him. Now, they cannot make their energy work by any such belief because the belief is false. But they do not question the belief because when they submit to a living authority's control and cannot get food, they can always blame the authority, and that gives them an alibi. This is what they have always done. The history of every group of men who ever obeyed a living authority is a history of revolts against all forms of that authority. Look at any available record of any people living anywhere at any time in the whole history of the world. They revolt against their king and replace him by another king. Then they revolt against him and set up still another king. In time, they revolt against monarchy and set up another kind of living authority. For generations or centuries, they revolt and change their rulers. Then they revolt against that kind of authority and set up another kind. From Nebuchadnezzar to Hitler, history is one long record of revolts, first against certain living rulers, and then revolts against kinds of living authority. When these revolts succeed, they are called revolutions. But they are revolutions only in the sense that a wheel's turning is a revolution. This is an old world revolution, and it is only a movement around a motionless center. It never breaks out of the circle. Firm in the center is belief in external authority of some kind. They replace the priest by a king, the king by an oligarchy, the oligarchs by a despot, the despot by an aristocracy, the aristocrats by a majority, the majority by a tyrant, the tyrant by oligarchs, the oligarchs by aristocrats, the aristocrats by a king, the king by a parliament, the parliament by a dictator, the dictator by a king, the king by... There is 6,000 years of that in every language. Every imaginable kind of living authority has been tried and is still being tried somewhere on earth now. All these kinds have been tried, too, in every possible combination. The priest and the king who is the priest, the king who is God, the king and a senate, the king and the senate and a majority, the senate and a tyrant, the tyrant and the aristocrats, a king and a parliament, try to think of a combination. Somewhere it has been tried. In 1920, the Albanians tried four quarter kings and aristocrats and a parliament all at the same time. The Bedouin of Iraq used to combine a tyrant with a majority. The emir had absolute power of life and death. He owned all the property, dictated all the marriages, made all the treaties and raids and wars. If he made one decision that the tribe did not approve, his subjects killed him and gave another man the job. This works all right, too, except the Bedouin do not get enough to eat. Each of these kinds of living authority and every one of the combinations has worked all right, except that the subjects never do get enough to eat. That's the end of the quotation from Discovery of Freedom. Let me go back over some of the important points that Mrs. Lane has brought out. First, she points out that what we call revolutions are, in point of fact, not real revolutions. They are simply revolutions in the sense that a wheel's turning is a revolution. Because revolutions, as we have thought of them in the past, and as some of them are occurring today, are no more than a turning around a firm center in which is embedded the notion that some external authority has to govern human beings. The only real revolution that ever began to occurred in this country in 1775 with the American Revolution, which, at least as it was conducted at the outset, was a revolt against authority per se. As it was put together, the original purpose was not to create a new government, but simply to get out from under the old, not to overthrow the old, to leave that available for those who wanted it, but simply to get out from under so that men could be free. And that was done with the knowledge and belief that each human being had certain unalienable rights, and that every human being had the same rights, and therefore no human being possibly could obtain to some kind of a rightful control of a second party without that second party's consent. Now that is a real revolution. And that revolution is the real revolution that is continuing today in the face of any number of revolutionary appearing movements which are merely struggles for power and replace, in a sense, the violence of a ballot-conducted election with the violence of a bullet-conducted election. Today, there are any number of groups which are violence-prone. Some of them are in power, and some of them seek power. But these are not revolutionary parties. Many people suppose that the communist movement is a revolutionary movement. It is really not. It is as old as the hills. It is merely a struggle for power, a struggle to take power away from those who have it and put it into the hands of those who do not have it. And in that sense, it is just a turning of the wheel around a motionless center. Firm in the center is the belief that somebody has to run other people. Now, whether it's going to be a group of people who represent the proletariat, so-called, or whether it's to be a group of people who represent the bourgeoisie, so-called, or whether it's to be a group of people who attempt or try or possibly, in a sense, maybe even succeed in part to represent both sides, the fact remains that this is a denial of the nature of man. By man's nature, each one of us controls himself. That is a fact. It is a fact of nature. True, we can influence others, we can frighten others, we can, in fact, kill others if we want to, but there is no way that we can control another. The only energy that will cause you to flex your fingers or raise your arm is yours, and the only decision that will cause that to happen is your decision. Of course, others may impose on you to get you to make that decision to conduct those movements. But in the end, the ultimate decision is yours. And the way that you behave is the result of your own judgment because that is the way nature has arranged it. Each human being, in fact, controls himself. Now, the real revolution is the revolution that proposes to set the world into a condition where that fact is recognized on as broad a front as possible. It is not presumed that it is possible to teach everyone that fact, even though it is a fact. At no time in the history of the world have human beings ever agreed on anything. Even the shape of the globe is still subject to dispute. In the Western world generally agree that the world is an orb, a sphere. But there is still a group of people in London who have a flat earth society and who believe that all of the arguments relating to the shape of the earth as being spheroid are false and nothing but propaganda. They are entitled to their belief. Anyone who wishes to believe whatever he wishes to believe is, of course, entitled to believe it. The fact is, of course, that we have never agreed on anything, and therefore to expect that humankind will agree that each one of us is, in fact, in control of his own energy is to expect too much. People simply will not believe that, and that is in any universal sense. So unanimity is neither expected nor sought. But what is anticipated is that the reality of nature will, and indeed is, beginning to make itself felt. Here and there in this country, and here and there around the world, more and more people are beginning to realize that the individual is, in fact, in charge of his own energy. Now, whether he controls his energy wisely or foolishly, whether he does it courageously or in fear, these are factors relating to his environment, to his conditioning, and to his general outlook. But the fact is that he, and only he, can control himself. Now that is the point. The real revolution is aimed at extending the American Revolution of 1775 into the future, wherein we generally recognize that each man has a right to pursue his own destiny, to own his own property, to consider his own person as sacred, and to treat others in like manner. Now that is the revolution. It is not a revolution that seeks power. On the contrary, instead of seeking a power shift, it seeks constantly to diminish the accumulations of power. Even at those points where it detects accumulations of power being used theoretically for good purposes, put quotes around good purposes, whenever you think of power being used. Because the individual who is concerned with the true revolution recognizes that all power is rationalized. Everyone who uses it always does so because he has what to him appears to be a good purpose. Let me take a few of the wielders of power today. There are, of course, in this country, two major political powers. They are the Democratic and the Republican Party. They are very large, and they wield an enormous amount of power in terms of their ability to control governmental agencies or the administration itself, wherein their ideas are imposed upon everyone else by force and violence. Keep in mind that that is the whole function of government. Its function is to arrive at a monopoly of power held by a limited number of people who will impose that power on everyone else. So your major holders of power today are those who legally hold it, those within legally recognized and accepted organizations called political parties who manipulate the public mind through propaganda, speeches, and oratory into believing that if you grant one particular group power rather than the other, everything is going to be fine for you. In point of fact, the American public is beginning finally to be disillusioned in this area. We now detect, after long experimentation in this area, that in point of fact, the differences that arise as a result of an election are academic in character. There are differences, of course. They are differences in degree. But overall, the concept remains the central idea that someone other than you has to make the meaningful decisions about what you do. And that is false. That is contrary to the nature of life and to the nature of man as they are. In addition to the legally entrenched political groups, there are some that are operating extra-legally. I will mention just a few of them. By no means am I meaning to exclude others. For example, one of the groups that is operating extra-legally today is the mafia or the syndicates. Here we have a group of men who operate not only in defiance of the law, but it has been fairly well established that they assist in passing the laws that they intend to operate in defiance of. These are people who are hard-headed businessmen who are engaged in just one condition or one activity. They are engaged in creating artificial scarcities in certain goods or services which can be stimulated into a high-demand area, and then, against the law, they supply those goods or services. Now, these people are fundamentally in what could be called the protection rackets. In essence, if you analyze it, the mafia, the syndicates, and organized gangsterism per se is doing illegally precisely what the government is doing legally. The difference is the legality, the legal sanction that is given to one body and not to the other. Aside from that, they are both in the game of protection. They are selling what purports to be protection, and they sell it at monopolistic prices and enforce their collections. Now, that is essentially what they are. We simply have various gangs here, some of them who are legally sanctioned and some who are not engaged in what is essentially the same business. May I point out for emphasis that the legally sanctioned groups, to wit, the political parties, operate precisely the same way the syndicates and the mafia do. To wit, they create artificial scarcities by passing laws which move into the economy and prevent people from producing certain goods, prevent other people from trading with other people, and do other things of a sanctioned nature which prevent a laissez-faire economy and militate against the idea of free trade and free exchange on the basis of individual desire. So there is no real difference between the mafia and the people in political office, except the difference of legal sanction. And what we as the general public seem to do is that we prefer, as Shakespeare said, to accept those dangers that we have rather than to fly to others that we know not of. And so we look with fear and apprehension upon the syndicate and the mafia, which indeed we should. They are illegal, they are gangsters, and they employ violence. But curiously, we look with joy and with hope on the other gangsters simply because they are legally entrenched and we sanction them, although their behavior is the same. Now, moving still further out of the area of what is sanctioned and what is not, you have a group of people who are seeking to take over the government. They are not truly revolutionaries. They are simply engaged in trying to conduct violent elections. Possibly the most formidable of this group would be the blacks, and notably the Black Panthers and other black militant organizations, which are doing their best now to gain power. This is a false revolution, because if they gain power, they would do precisely the same that the people in power are presently doing. There is no progress here. There is no real revolution. It is only, again, the turning of the wheel. Firm in the center is reliance upon the idea that somebody has got to have power over other people. Now, the blacks justify their action here on the grounds that they have been mistreated in the past. There is no question of that fact. They have been grossly mistreated and abused in the past, an abuse and mistreatment and prejudice that continues up to the present time. However, the same thing can be true and the same thing can be said of every other group that ever existed and exists now. All of us have been abused and mistreated in the past by various groups that are organized to impose their wills upon us. Perhaps the blacks form an outstanding and a very sensitive case, but others also are in much the same category. There was a time when we treated the Chinese this same way. There was a time when we treated the Irish this way. There was a time when we treated the Japanese this way. There was a time when we treated the Germans this way. There was a time, and there may be a time again, when we feel this way about the British, the French, the Yugoslavians, or the Abyssinians. It doesn't make any difference. It is possible to engender prejudice and antagonism against any group. I recall that these same things have been done against Jews, against Catholics, against Protestants, against Muslims, against Hindus, against Buddhists. We can always organize hatred and prejudice against some group and then mistreat them. And when we do, we awaken in them the desire to organize with force and to gain power so that they can get their own back. And that's essentially what you have here. The black movement, the black militant movement, is essentially aimed at vengeance. It is aimed at retaliating for admittedly bad treatment. Let's take another group. The KKK, the Ku Klux Klan. Here we have another group of militants moving in exactly the other way. Here we have a group of militants who believe that the entrenched holders of legalized power have never been severe enough, nor Christian enough, nor dogmatic enough in order to obtain the kind of a society that the people who belong to the KKK would like to see. And therefore, they propose and often have taken power into their own hands to punish individuals whom they felt were wrong. And here we have a case again of organized vengeance conducted sometimes against a race or sometimes simply against individuals who, in the minds of those managing this particular movement, have done things that are unconscionable and they should be punished. They should be banished or possibly even put to death. At least they should be scared. Another group of revolutionaries in this sense would be the Weathermen, that particular splinter faction of the SDS that broke away only recently and attempts here to, in a sense, carry on the same type of revolution that was called for by Karl Marx. The Weathermen faction is essentially socialistic, if not communistic, and its whole aim is to seize power in order that the economy can be revised in terms of a different plan of distribution than a free market would make possible. That's essentially what it is. But once more, you see the same factor. It is a drive by means of which a different group of people are supposed to get power over everybody else. The only difference in each of these cases is the particular group involved and the particular large area that is going to feel the brunt of the impositions that are leveled by these people. Another group countering the Weathermen would be the Minutemen. We haven't heard very much about them lately because it is entirely possible that the government has now stamped them out. I believe their leader has been arrested. But in any case, the leaders of the Black Panthers have been arrested too. So it doesn't really mean too much here. The Minutemen were simply organized along the line of counteracting people such as the Weathermen. And here again, the Minutemen would believe that the legalized and entrenched agencies of power have not done the job, that they are, quote, soft on communism, unquote. And therefore, the Minutemen propose to take power into their hands in order to have their will enforced upon the masses of people. And so it goes. We have these pseudo-revolutionary forces who, in point of fact, are merely reactionary forces. They are simply engaged in conducting violent elections because they don't believe that a ballot-controlled election would get them anywhere. There aren't enough of them. On any kind of nose-counting that you care to conduct, none of the groups that I've mentioned could possibly win an election. And therefore, since they despair of winning an election, winning a majority count, they simply resort to violence in order to obtain a monopoly of power over the total society. Now, there are other splinter factions further down the line that are not as firmly entrenched in power-seeking illegally, but nonetheless, they do propose to seek power, and they propose to seek it more or less in a legal faction, in a legal fashion. Among these would be, for example, the so-called Gay Liberation Front. Here we have a group of heterosexuals who are trying at the moment to get prejudice removed from them by virtue of the fact that they are somewhat different than what we think of as normal. Here we have people who, as males, they tend to fall in love with other males, or as females, they tend to fall in love with other females. And one of the interesting things, and in fact almost humorous things, is the current movement just at this time, where some of them are seeking, they say, to take over one of the counties in California. It happens to be a county with a very sparse population, and they propose to move into it in sufficient numbers so that there will be more members of their front there than the existing numbers of persons in that county, at which point, operating within the system and entirely legal, they would propose to elect themselves to public office and to take over and run the county in their own favor. Of course, the existing residents of the county are up in arms about it, and yet from the standpoint of legality, the Gay Liberation Front is operating quite legally, according to the system and according to the guidelines set up, and the affair, I suspect, is largely a come-on, I think, or a put-on. I think what they're attempting to do is merely to dramatize the nature of the system itself, wherein this could be done by anyone. Any group of people who wanted to move into a sparsely settled place could do so and ultimately take over. Then there is, of course, the Women's Liberation Front. Here we have a group of rather militant women. They are not trying to overturn anything, excepting laws that tend to give males advantage over them, or possibly even laws that give them advantage over males. But they're operating not to obtain total power, but to obtain reform through the use of power within the system. Another group would be the John Birch Society, aimed similarly. That is, they are seeking essentially to have laws enacted to operate within the system and to retain the system, but fundamentally to do it by obtaining power that will be used as they wish it. Along with this would be the SDS generally and other various splinter groups. Today there is a repolarization of thought. And again, let me stress, there really is just one revolution. And that is the real revolution, the revolution that proposes not to switch power and move it from one group into another, but it proposes to diminish the centers of power so that men can be free as individuals. Thank you.